So I'm probably going to have to go call.
Good morning. I'd like to call the special board meeting of the Forest Practices Board to order today on March 26th. Welcome to Olympia for those of you who have traveled some distance to be with us today. We have a short agenda. This is a special board meeting. And I think I'd like to start with introductions from the board and start on my far right with Norm here, please.
Norm Schaaf, general public member.
Bill Little, I represent the timber unions.
Brad Avey, representing the Department of Agriculture.
Good morning. Dave Hagelar, general public member.
Carolyn Dobbs, general public member.
And Peter Goldmark, commissioner of public lands.
Morning, everyone. Tom Worry, ecology.
Morning. Sherry Fox, representing the independent contract logger.
Good morning. Dave Herrera, general public member.
Hi. David Whipple, representing Department of Fish and Wildlife.
And on the phone?
Doug Stinson, general public member, small forest landowner.
Anybody else by phone? Dave Summers, are you with us by any chance? Staff, do we know what the...
I don't know.
I heard that he had the intention of joining us, but has not done so yet.
Correct.
Are you in communication with him by email?
Not yet.
Okay.
Alfred called.
All right, thank you. So clearly we have a quorum. Clearly we, to my memory then, we only have one member that's not with us yet today. I think it might be appropriate to just briefly, starting on my left over here in the front row, could the audience introduce themselves, please?
My name is Jeff Light with Plum Creek Timber Company.
My name is Chris Mendoza. I'm with Conservation Caucus.
Miguel Perez Gibson, Conservation Caucus.
Good morning, Kevin Godbu with the Weyerhaeuser Company.
Tom Robinson, Washington State Association County.
Carl Forrester, Conservation Caucus.
Peter Bowman, Conservation Caucus.
Tim McBride, Hancock Forest Management.
Mark Doma, Washington Forest Protection Association.
Port Stanley, Port Lakeley Tree Farm.
Jim Lynch, Westport Timber.
Scott Swanson, Westport Timber Company.
And Sister Han, Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission.
And Harry Bell.
Dave Summers.
Morning, Dave. We're just going around the room. Welcome.
Harry Bell, Green Crow Management Services.
Leslie Lehman with the Forest Practices Division.
Adrian Miller, Washington Forest Protection Association.
Patty Page, Green Diamond Resource Company.
Craig Carter, DNR.
Steve Thacker, DNR.
Kristen Song, Weyerhaeuser.
Yeah.
Christopher Stanley, OFM Budgets.
Robert Meyer, Reindeer.
Peter Heidi with WFPA.
Jeff Davis, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Terry Jackson, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Steve Burdaff, Department of Ecology.
Tom Davis, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Jim Hoppett, Department of Natural Resources.
Bill Vogel, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Gretchen Robinson, Forest Practices Division.
Julie Sackett, Forest Practices Division.
Cindy Mitchell, WFPA.
Chuck Fairley, DNR.
Darren Kramer, DNR Forest Practices Division Manager.
I'm Phil Ferrister, Assistant Attorney General and Counsel of the Board.
Mark Engel, DNR Forest Practices Division.
Shane Martinez, Forest Practice Division.
Trish Anderson, DNR Forest Practices Board Rules Coordinator.
All right, thank you. And I think we've had our other board member join us. Would you introduce yourself, please, Dave?
Yeah, Dave Summers, Snohomish County, representing counties.
All right, thank you. Obviously, we have one other board member who's not here, and that's Brent Barenberg from, I believe, the Department of Commerce. He's not here yet. All right, thank you for those introductions, members of the audience. And I think we need a safety briefing.
Good morning, and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. In the event of a fire, alarms will sound and flash. Please leave this room using the double doors in the front of the room. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. Please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can or go under a table. After the shaking has stopped, leave this room using the double doors in the front of the room and exit the building following DNR staff who will lead you out to the grassy area along Jefferson Street. There, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and responding to emergencies. And at this time, I ask that you silence any noise-making devices you have. And also, as an awareness, please be aware that there may be some additional noise outside of the building due to possibly a protest going on next door to another building. So, thank you.
And so in that regard, I'd just like to ask everyone to use the doors to the hallway and not to use the double doors unless an emergency arises, just in the interest of keeping the noise factor down. So thank you for that, for those introductions and for the safety briefing. I think our agenda today, we have two items of interest, and we are taking public comment at this time on both items. Members of the public have signed up. We have 14 individuals who have signed up to make comment. I think we'd like to get started on that. Before we do so, I'd like to remind everybody that in the interest of time, to please limit your comments to 3 minutes. And so let's get started. The first individual is Scott Swanson. Morning, Scott.
Thank you, and morning, Commissioner and board members. Appreciate the chance to be here again. I think maybe this is the fourth time that I've talked to you on this particular subject, so I won't try and go through everything again, but I do appreciate the chance to be here. I represent West Fork Timber Company. I'm manager and vice president. Again, it's a family-owned company, and they have their ownership up in the eastern part of Lewis County. As the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has stated in writing and in presentations to the committee, HCPs that incorporate watershed analysis and related mass wasting prescriptions are working well, and the Fish and Wildlife Service oversees implementation of these measures. Landowners that have developed and are implementing HCPs have done the right thing and should not be penalized by taking away regulatory certainty they have worked long and hard to obtain. The DNR's prioritization criteria for watershed analysis reviews should explicitly recognize those HCPs and make clear that reviews of such privately sponsored watershed analyses are not required so long as the Fish and Wildlife Service concurs that these watershed analyses are up to date. We believe that the DNR possesses the necessary authority to address concerns raised about watershed analysis without triggering the adaptive management process. Indeed, as the DNR states in its packet, the adaptive management process is already overburdened, and they request authority to make any such process relating to watershed analysis a low priority. We recommend that DNR be required to simply get to work, apply the authorities that have, as evidenced by Appendix 1, and bring back more specific adaptive management proposals if this process doesn't work over time. We note that Weyerhaeuser and DNR recently issued a press release yesterday indicating that Weyerhaeuser has voluntarily agreed to take steps to address concerns on its land. And we applaud Weyerhaeuser for agreeing to such voluntary measures such as those. And those are similar to what we have done in the past as an ACP holder as we've been reviewing our watershed analyses over time. This agreement by DNR and Weyerhaeuser shows that the best approach is collaborative, and triggering adaptive management in this juncture potentially delays this effort. So please, in your deliberations today, take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Adrian Miller, please.
Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark and board members. I'm Adrian Miller with the Washington Forest Protection Association. I'd like to begin by thanking Carolyn Dobbs for making the point Wednesday in the board's bylaws subcommittee that it is quite challenging to receive significant information on an issue before the board and only have a few days to digest. The short time frame we all face also makes it difficult for individual caucuses to fully evaluate the impacts of a proposal, come to a position, and removes any real opportunity to discuss with other caucuses potential resolutions prior to board action. WFPA supports implementing the board subcommittee's consensus recommendations. WFPA also supports DNR's proposal in Attachment 1 of your board packet. WFPA cannot support DNR's proposal to initiate adaptive management outlined in Attachment 2 of the board's packet. WFPA can support the Mass Wasting Subcommittee's consensus recommendations because they were developed over time and we have a clear understanding of what they mean. Additionally, WFPA can support DNR's proposal for implementing those recommendations because we and other caucuses have worked with DNR over the past several weeks to fully understand their position. Unfortunately, this is not the case with DNR's proposal to initiate adaptive management, a necessary precursor to rulemaking. While we understood DNR was considering some kind of proposal around their concern of vagueness of authority in the rules, the specific proposal was only daylighted Monday evening. Generally, our concerns with the two issues presented in the adaptive management proposal are that they propose potentially significant changes to the Forest and Fish Board. The first issue considers transferring the responsibility of maintaining watershed analysis prescriptions from the Department of Natural Resources to forest landowners. We believe that this responsibility could be shared. However, we cannot support, and nor should other caucuses support, transferring the responsibility of conducting reviews entirely to private landowners. The second issue considers expanding the Department of Natural Resources authority to augment prescriptions prior to and during the review process. Private landowners have a track record of working with the department to implement reviews. In fact, as Scott previously noted, West Fork Timber has undergone not only periodic reviews of their watershed analysis, but also reviews in response to storm events. During the review of the storm event, West Fork Timber voluntarily agreed to limit harvest operations prior to and during the review. Additionally, Weyerhaeuser Company, the state's largest private timber landowner, has also agreed to augment their prescriptions prior to and during the review of their watersheds impacted by the 2007 storm event. WFPA believes that implementing the board's mass wasting subcommittee's recommendations as they have outlined in attachment one will be the fastest way to provide protection of public resources and will offer landowners the most amount of certainty in this regulatory process. We believe that this process has and can be accomplished without initiating adaptive management and subsequent potential rule changes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jim Lynch. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner, members of the board. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come back and speak to you again about watershed analysis. As Scott mentioned in his testimony, this is probably at least the third time that we've given you testimony on these issues. We're hopeful that today some clear and concise decisions can be made such that resources are protected and that the good work that has been done on the ground is preserved, and that we continue to encourage the voluntary efforts of members of the industry that have undertaken them. With that being said, I have a couple of procedural questions or issues I'd like to raise, as well as a couple substantive issues I'd like to remind the board of your deliberations and considerations today. First of all, the board did convene a committee that developed consensus recommendations that worked over several months. Those consensus recommendations have been put before you and presented. We recommend that those consensus recommendations are adopted today. That good work of that committee should not go unnoticed, and I think it paints a picture that these issues can be resolved through collaboration, not only as evidenced by the committee recommendations, but the recent announcements made by Weyerhaeuser, as well as just the good work of HCP holders. I would also note, as Adrian mentioned, the detailed recommendations or the proposal made by staff that's before you today came out 3 days ago. We think as a matter of process, these types of recommendations need to come out well in advance of any board meeting. Board members and the public need to be given ample opportunity to review and discuss those things. We also think that through that type of a process, that some of these recommendations may go away. Therefore, we suggest and recommend that the board postpone deliberation of that specific proposal today until a future board meeting, until everyone has had a chance to review that in more detail. I would also like to remind you of the discussions and the evidence that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and others have put before you regarding HCPs. Folks that are in HCPs have been at this a long time. These HCPs are working well. The Fish and Wildlife Service agrees with that position, and there's ample evidence of that before you. We believe that any proposal regarding informal or formal discussion needs to acknowledge the efforts of those HCP holders. When HCPs and adaptive watershed analysis included within HCPs are deemed working well by Fish and Wildlife Service, DNR should defer to that. That will save a lot of time. It will keep encouraging these types of voluntary efforts, and it will take away the need for DNR to spend limited resources on these types of measures. In conclusion, what I would say is that we believe DNR has ample authority to implement watershed analysis to oversee it. We do not believe that additional adaptive management is necessary at this time. We recommend that the board urge DNR and its staff to do its job, to implement the law as it is, to use the authorities that the AG's office and others have identified, and if issues come about as a result of that implementation, there is always the opportunity to bring back proposals to this board for further consideration. At that time, those proposals would be better informed through a lot of discussion and analysis, and changes could be made that are necessary and not simply just a waste of time and resources in terms of development. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Harry Bell. Morning, Harry.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. In the early 80s, I sat before your predecessors, and they were having a similar debate about a very contentious issue, stream buffering. Your predecessors took the recommendations of the DNR and others, passed a draft set of rules that wasn't really good. All of the then to become stakeholders picked up our marbles, went up the CTAC, rented a conference hall, negotiated the TFW agreement, negotiated CEMER, negotiated that adaptive management, and later on the whole issue of watershed analysis. My point is, and where I'm headed, is that you should look at your history of success and your history of failure. When you took the guidance of the stakeholders, you were successful. When you took the guidance of one or two individual advocacy groups, you failed. And so my recommendation to you is to listen to the stakeholders. We know what we're doing. We have ownership in the consensus proposals, and there is a high likelihood that we will deliver. But don't take unilateral action and start adaptive management or rulemaking process, because you're probably going to get opposition, you're going to create confusion, contention, polarization, and all the nasty things that happen in the early days before TFW. And so my recommendation is go with the consensus, see where that takes us. Very high likelihood you'll be successful, and don't start a rulemaking process, because there's a very high likelihood of a nasty fight with very little success or resource protection. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Court Stanley. Morning, Court.
Morning, Commissioner. Members of the board. I'm Court Stanley, president of Port Blakely Tree Farms, and I will be very brief. Port Blakely supports the subcommittee's recommendation, and hopefully the board will pass it today. We do have concerns and would like to recommend postponing DNR's recommendation to go through adaptive management. Port Blakely, within watershed analysis, since its inception, we've been using rural identified landforms or watershed analysis prescriptions, whichever are more conservative, and it's been working. We feel right now that it would be good to let the subcommittee's recommendations work, monitor it, give it some time, a year, and if necessary, then go to adaptive management, but not do it concurrently. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff Light. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark and members of the board. My name is Jeff Light. I'm a hydrologist with Plum Creek Timber Company. Plum Creek owns about 90,000 acres of timberland in the Central Cascades that are managed under a federally approved habitat conservation plan. And watershed analysis is built into that plan by design for helping us to understand our watersheds, and from that understanding to develop prescriptions that deal with forest management sensitivities in those watersheds. And in that regard, watershed analysis has served our HCP like it has served the development of the current statewide forest practice rules and regs that operate everywhere else. But in any case, reevaluate the compliance and effectiveness of the prescriptions that we have in watershed analysis, including mass wasting prescriptions, as part of our normal habitat conservation plan review process. We've, through that effort, we've made some adjustments to the original prescriptions, but on the whole, those prescriptions have worked well to protect the aquatic resources in the upper Green River, Yakima River, and Natchez River basins, and we therefore feel that Plum Creek Northern Services feel that the process for review of those watershed analysis prescriptions really is necessary, and we feel the steps that are proposed in the rulemaking effort would be extremely costly and time-consuming and really way out of line with the any issue that a watershed analysis might bring. So for nearly 15 years, we've been implementing our HCP in partnership with the regional staff of the DNR and with the federal services, federal government, and other stakeholders in our watersheds. And that partnership has been very solid, and we've accomplished a lot for resource protection in the basins where we manage. So we'd like you to acknowledge that partnership. We'd like you to acknowledge the investment that the landowners made in watershed analysis and the continuing dividends that investment is paying for resource protection through all HCP holders that currently have incidental take permits and work with the services to make sure that our watershed prescriptions and all prescriptions are working well to achieve the outcomes that we desire for that. So I would ask you for adopting the consent recommendations that were in the packet that you had, and also in addition to clarify that in that watershed analysis review process, that HCP holders, ITP holders, be separated out from that as not having to go through that prioritization and rulemaking or review process. We already have the process in place. We think it's working fine. You can address concerns with the services and us through that. So we would ask you to give that special record, clarify and give it explicit recognition for what it is. Thank you.
Thank you. William Vogel. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, members of the board. My name is William Vogel. I'm with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And I came this morning because I did want to touch a little on the history. And I think it has some implications in that when the current rules, the forest and fish report was being discussed, there were hundreds of watershed analyses to be done across the state. They were expensive, they were taking a lot of time, and so it would have been a very long time before that protection went in place, and therefore people looked to the rules very heavily. It wasn't sure how that was going to come out as the new rules were put in place, and so there was direction from DNR staff at the time about their workloads in SEPA, and so I think there actually are more reviews that were done than you're aware of. It's just that they didn't go through SEPA, so that's just a little bit of history there. I'd like to talk about two different types of watershed analyses. There are those that only have a link to a federal HCP through the Forest Practices HCP, and the services are very concerned to make sure that the Forest Practices HCP is properly implemented, but it's DNR that administers that HCP, and so we defer to DNR and the board and the other stakeholders as how you work through issues on those watershed analyses. What the group believes is necessary to make sure that that HCP is properly implemented. The second sort of basket of watershed analyses I'd like to talk about are those that deal with the land-based HCPs. And those change over time. They are adaptive. We do make modifications to them occasionally. We've made changes in how watershed analysis is done, how prescriptions go into effect. They do not, for instance, wait for SEPA. They go into effect immediately. How they're reviewed, we review them differently than occurred through the state process. They have added monitoring through the other aspects of the HCP and additional scrutiny. So therefore, we believe that HCP permittees that are properly implementing their HCPs and in consideration of all the other prescriptions that they do and the other monitoring required by those HCPs should not need an extra layer of review. We're happy to discuss the status of these HCPs and those watershed analyses with others if desired.
And I just wanted to make a point that, that either way that you decide, we look forward to working with your DNR staff, either in assessing which watershed analyses need to be prioritized, or as we might review them under the HCP, to work with your DNR staff to utilize their expertise as well.
Right.
Thank you.
Kim McBride. Morning, Kim.
Morning, Commissioner. Members of the board. I think Hancock's comments to the board on this subject are pretty much following the general theme that you've heard today. There's a lack of collaboration and coordination with this issue coming out just 3 days ago. It doesn't allow us or anybody really to look at the proposal, make some very detailed comments about it, and try to bring it up to that collaboration stage. We really recommend and support Carolyn Dobbs' initiative to the board, where maybe a little bit more time is put in place for proposals such as this. I think she's got the collaboration mindset, and I think we all need to take a step back and look at that and realize that where's one voice for working forests is probably the best way to go. And if we have one voice, then that means we're all collaborative, we're working together, and probably better things get done at that with that stage. So anyway, we appreciate it, Carolyn. Thanks again. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Peter Goldman.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chairman Goldmark and Board. Peter Goldman of the Washington Forest Law Center, representing the Conservation Caucus here. I'd like to make 3 points. First, rulemaking is not optional, but in this situation is compulsory. As many stakeholders appear to agree, it's imperative for the board to move this matter to policy so that rulemaking revisions to the watershed analysis rules can be made. The watershed analysis rules are not protecting many of our watersheds today, and we have numerous stale and outdated rules on the books that create gaping deficiencies and loopholes. These loopholes are allowing some, but not all, landowners to log in places that they would never be able to log under today's rules. There's unfortunately no way to fix the problem with voluntary agreements. The watershed analysis rules need to be reevaluated and fixed. Either the watershed analysis exemption needs to be fixed, funded, or discarded. There's no way to just put this off to a future date. Doing this through voluntary agreements would not be legal under the Administrative Procedures Act, and it would be bad public policy. My second point is that our caucus is concerned that while policy and this board consider whether to completely or partially phase out watershed analysis, landowners will continue to file FPAs under stale and unreviewed watershed analysis. Two very good examples of what was taking place are, of course, the Weyerhaeuser Stillman Creek FPA, which I passed out a copy of the one page from the FPA, which said it's in the watershed analysis, no steep slopes were identified. The second example is from the ACME watershed analysis, which in that particular case, approximately 87% of the 101 landslides that occurred on rule-identified landforms. And DNR prepared a comprehensive report, and that report more or less indicted some of the watershed analysis prescriptions. There's a gap between what the watershed analysis allows and what the standard rules would allow. And that's a very good example of a watershed where watershed analysis just is not working. So during the interim, we think it would be appropriate for this board to urge DNR to liberally use its conditioning authority, whether voluntarily, as the Weyerhaeuser Company is appearing to do now, or through its material damage authority, to just really screen the high-risk FPAs in those watershed analyses so we don't have a situation where we're spending a lot of time looking at the rules and reevaluating things, which we all need to do, but we have FPAs being approved. And finally, my last point is that I urge the board to direct DNR to take a no-nonsense approach to reviewing the watershed analyses still in the books. This department's budget has been slashed. It doesn't have a lot of staff. We're concerned about the ability of DNR to implement a rigorous, standardized process to review those watershed analysis prescriptions for which a landowner wants to update and review. That needs to be done with sufficient resources, with sufficient rigor, and we're concerned that the agency does not have the ability to provide that kind of oversight. Landowners need to do a lot of the work, but they need separate, independent review. This cannot be a case of the fox watching the hen house. So with that said, we think that there needs to be a stopgap measure, and the review needs to be rigorous and careful. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Gotti.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Goldmark and board members. My name is Kevin Godbu of the Weyerhaeuser Company. First, I'd like to thank and recognize the leadership of Commissioner Goldmark and DNR staff in developing this much-discussed agreement between Weyerhaeuser Company and DNR regarding the issues you're facing today, watershed analysis, review, and potentially interim protection measures. The approach that we took is pretty simple. Start conducting reviews, and if appropriate, take voluntary interim measures to protect public resources and continue to focus on science and adaptive management changes and processes through partnerships and collaboration out in the field. We think that through this type of collaboration, landowners and regulators and stakeholders can solve this problem by just taking action, getting to work. We don't necessarily need a lot of new process. We just need to go do this type of action that everybody thinks is important, and we agree. So we think we have the existing authority to do it. We need the will to go do it. And in terms of some of the issues you'll discuss later, adaptive management proposals, we support the comments that were expressed by Adrian Miller and WFPA. It's probably a little premature to move in that direction, but if the board so chooses, we'll help and participate in that. But there are some issues associated with the proposal that if it comes up, we'd like to discuss with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carl Forsgaard. Morning, Carl.
Morning. Members of the board, good morning, and thank you for this opportunity to comment. My name is Carl Forsgaard. I'm a staff attorney at the Washington Forest Law Center. And we represent the Conservation Caucus regarding forest practice rules. I'm here to comment on watershed analysis. We support DNR's recommendation to initiate rulemaking. The Conservation Caucus urges the board to forward DNR staff's proposal initiation packet to the Adaptive Management Administrator immediately to begin the adaptive management process to consider amending the watershed analysis rules. The board should also direct policy to report to the board at the board's May meeting regarding the status of policy's efforts to consider and recommend possible revisions to those rules. Policy has two meetings between now and then. The rule changes are needed for several reasons. First, FPAs that get SEPA exemptions based on out-of-date watershed analyses may pose risks to public resources and safety. To justify a SEPA exemption, a watershed analysis and its mass wasting prescription should be up to date. And that's a big difference between the committee's recommendations and the DNR staff's rule initiation packet. WFPA said that the subcommittee recommendations are clear and everybody understands them, and they don't see the staff's recommendation the same way. I suggest the opposite is true. In the subcommittee recommendations, as we pointed out in a previous comment letter, recommendation number one through the collaborative process going into their last meeting called for the continued use of up-to-date watershed analysis mass wasting prescriptions. But at the very end, the words up to date were deleted from that recommendation. And that's a very questionable edit. But the staff's recommendation has possible rule revisions that could include reinforcing the concept that watershed analyses need to be kept up to date. So they're being very explicit about up to date, and the board subcommittee was vague on that point. And I think just to give an example, as we applaud Weyerhaeuser for its voluntary measures announced last night, it should still be pointed out that the Stillman Creek watershed analysis had a five-year review completed in 2000. That was the last time it was updated. And at that time, it did not incorporate the forests and fish rule identified landforms because it was begun in 1999 or prior. And Weyerhaeuser just confirmed today that it did not incorporate those rule identified landforms. And so when the famous Stillman Creek landslide incident occurred, that watershed analysis was not what DNR staff or this profession should consider to be up to date. It wasn't. It didn't have those rule identified landforms incorporated. And we are concerned about that loophole. And in the meantime, until the rules get changed, those out-of-date watershed analyses are still being invoked to get SEPA exemptions and no SEPA reviews occurring. DNR is proposing to screen FPAs and use its limited conditioning authority to the extent it can, but that puts the burden on DNR staff resources, which are very scarce. So we agree with DNR's recommendation that it be given the authority to deny FPAs where the landowner won't voluntarily agree to voluntary concessions. And that will also put the burden on the landowners to make sure that their reviews get done and not go for years and years and years without being done because DNR doesn't have the resources to do it. The fact is...
Carl, excuse me, could you complete, please?
Yes. The fact is that most watershed analyses are not up to date, and only one has completed a five-year review in the last 5 years. I didn't know that till yesterday. The DNR gave me that data. Only one has been. The other reason is that DNR has 14 watershed analyses that it was the sponsor of. It wants to get out of those because it can't update them, doesn't have the resources to update them. The rules don't allow DNR to opt out of those. And the third reason is private landowners, if they want to opt out of their watershed analysis, mass wasting prescriptions, don't have the ability to, and that rule change is needed. So in addition to your rulemaking decision, if you give any direction to DNR staff regarding FPA review in the near term, please make sure that that's communicated out to the field, to the regional offices and the field foresters and geologists, as well as the division office. Thank you for your consideration.
Bob Meyer.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner, board members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. My name is Robert Meyer, manager of Forest and Land Policy for Rainier. Rainier supports the subcommittee's process for watershed review. We were an early adopter of watershed analysis in the state of Washington. We hired contractors to conduct watershed analysis prior to the rule adoption, and that process was used in part to inform the watershed analysis process that was later adopted by the state of Washington. After that, we hired Dr. Julie Dew to conduct watershed analysis on many of our properties, and she led quite a number of those reviews for watershed analysis. We believe that those watershed analysis prescriptions have been very effective in protecting public resources. We are a large part of our land and most of our analysis are in the Olympic Peninsula, an area with very high rainfall. And we have been very successful in minimizing landslide events in those areas. We would probably recommend on the watershed analysis that we have done that we do detailed reviews of about half of those because we have already invested a great deal of money in the scientific analysis that was performed and in the detailed prescriptions that were made. The other half, we would probably say we might as well convert to standard or incorporate standard prescriptions because the prescriptions of those watersheds are actually very close to the current rules. I would urge you not to distract landowners and the DNR with additional policy review and analysis and work, but rather that you would encourage landowners and the DNR to move forward with the watershed updates that need to be done, and that you in that way allocate our limited resources to those things that would actually have real effects on the ground. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Miguel Perez Gibson.
Good morning, Miguel. Good morning, Commissioner, members of the board. Is this on? So I'm not going to repeat a lot of what's already been said by our caucus, but I'm here representing the Conservation Caucus as well. I just have a few questions that I'm not clear on the answer to, and today I hope that DNR staff will be able to provide the answers, and I'm just going to list them for you, and hopefully if you don't have the answer, you'll ask the DNR staff as well. But my understanding of a watershed analysis program is that I don't think we have any funding for it specifically in the DNR budget. And back in its heyday, when it was the going concern, and again, I get corrected on this, but I think it was somewhere like a $3 million program, either biennium or a year, I don't remember. It was a big going concern. So the obvious question here is capacity and the ability to run two parallel programs, if you will, the HCP and watershed analysis. The other piece of this is the question is it appropriate for forest and fish policy to review? And then the capacity for DNR staff to take on this new work. What's not going to get done? There's been obvious cuts in the budget, so the question here is just capacity to do this. And then the third area question is around just simplifying this to its most basic element, is let's just take a forest practice application, an 80-acre clear cut that comes in for approval, and unstable slopes are an issue. So the question that I have is, apparently you can have a forest practice application come in with an 80-acre clear cut on unstable slopes are an issue, and it's following the HCP prescriptions. So that's one category. So what's the approval process for that one? Two, it sounds like you can have a forest practice application come in that is under a watershed analysis prescription that's a approved current up-to-date watershed analysis and may also be part of an HCP. So that's another category. What's the approval process for that one? And then the third one, as far as I can see, is a forest practice application comes in again, but the watershed analysis isn't current. It was approved way back then. You know, maybe it's version 1.0 instead of 3.5 that someone else is using. And the question is, the prescriptions, the question is whether they're adequate or not. Does DNR still have to approve that application? Or can they condition it? And that's the question as to whether or not a rule change is needed around the answer to that one. So thank you for your consideration. I look forward to the staff's presentation and hopefully getting some answers to those questions.
Thank you. Chris Mendoza.
Good morning, Commissioner and board members. I just had a few statements to make. Essentially, I'm here as a CEMER co-chair. I know it looks like CEMER's been brought into this document. So I just want to speak to a couple issues for clarification, not in support or opposed to anything. Mainly to clarify what CEMER's doing, what they're not. For those of you that have the packet, if you read backwards, which sometimes isn't a bad idea, to read a document from the back to the front, and if you go back three pages onto page 9, there's the mass wasting effectiveness monitoring program, it's table 4. That lists the CEMER projects that are related to mass wasting effectiveness. And just as an update, the first one up there is testing the accuracy of unstable landform identification. Are we accurately identifying them? We've got a project in the hopper there. Hasn't been started yet on the ground, but it's been scoped. We're planning on doing something with that very soon, hopefully within this year. The next one is the mass wasting prescription scale, also known as postmortem.
That one's about ready to be wrapped up this summer through SEMA review and then off peer review. And the other ones we haven't started yet. We haven't been scoped. Landscape scale effectiveness and the buffer integrity and wind field assessment. So just to be clear, I want to make sure that folks knew what was going on and what wasn't with SEMA. I know different people have different understandings of what we do and how we go about it and when we get our work done. Secondly, regarding watershed analysis, I think many of us in the room that were, particularly the technical folks, Jeff Light, Nancy Sturhan, and others that were part of the watershed analysis process in the 90s, thought it was a pretty good idea. It was one of the first things that technical folks from different disciplines came together and actually worked together to look closely at what happened in a watershed. What some folks don't know is the recommendations that came out of the technical folks weren't always the ones that transferred into the prescriptions. And there was a separate group that did that. And as a result, you got inconsistencies between watershed analyses. Some are better than others. And that was just kind of the nature of the beast back then. Concerning monitoring, as Bill Vogel spoke earlier and others, the watershed analyses that have ITP coverage and have monitoring going on in them required by the feds. Those that don't, even though we had a monitoring module under watershed analysis, it was voluntary. A lot of people don't understand that either, that people got trained to monitor, but unless they were doing ITPs or HCPs, the actual voluntary portion of that monitoring to a large extent didn't exist. And lastly, if you have a map in here, you've got a list of watershed analyses on one page, and you've got a printed out version of the basically where they are and where they're not. What I did for folks to understand, well, even with my own folks, is that there's a group of watershed analyses that fall in the postmortem study, in other words, where we're doing it, and I kind of do a red circle around it. Just to give an idea, good question, people are going to wonder, well, how many of these watershed analyses are actually in post-mortem study and how will that inform us? So you can see there's some in there, but there's a lot of them that fall outside it. So what we're going to learn from that is, you'll get it eventually, but that gives you an idea of where they lay out on the landscape. And lastly, I'd like to applaud method that Darren and DNR staff came up with for screening the watershed analyses. This draft table here, looks like a really effective way to go about screening the quality of the watershed analyses, and with some of the new tools we have, particularly LIDAR coverage, we can really do they're doing a good job of sorting that out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So that completes our time for public comment. Everyone who signed up has had that opportunity to comment. I'm going to follow the agenda here. Although it's a little bit out of order in my mind, but I think it's the agenda calls for a brief update from Chuck Turley on our northern spotted owl issue.
Commissioner Goldmark, members of the board, good morning. Again, my name is Chuck Turley, Department of Natural Resources. And yes, this is not about watershed analysis as much as I wished it were otherwise. I want to give you a quick update. As you remember at the last board meeting, the Northern Spotted Owl Working Group made its recommendations to you, which you accepted. And there was a motion passed that we form a small implementation team to move this forward. And I just want to give you an update on that team. Basically, I've been working to put that together. I didn't get confirmation on the final member of it until yesterday morning. But we do have all five members named. WDFW will be represented by David Whipple, Conservation Community by Sean Cantrell, Landowners by Kevin Godbout, a Land Trust organization that will be Bettina Von Hagen, who's with EcoTrust, and I'll represent DNR and chair of the board. So we do have the group put together now. We're going to start meeting as soon as we can. The group will operate consistent with the Open Public Meetings Act, as the original OWL group and our Watershed Analysis Committee did. So we will be publishing times and dates for upcoming meetings. At the May meeting, we plan on bringing you back a charter, a proposal for how that group will operate, and a timeline. Those were the items laid out in your motion.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Chuck? All right. Thank you. Next item is watershed analysis. Darren?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Darren Kramer, Forest Practices Division Manager. Right on time almost, so we're going to try to step through this pretty quickly so there's plenty of time for Q&A and discussion. I want to do two things before we dig into the details. Let's make sure you have everything that I have in my packet and that you understand what they are. And then I'm going to refresh on a little bit about watershed analysis itself and then do a light touch on the chronology over the last a little over 2 years that this process has been ongoing that led to the recommendations coming to you last month. So let's start with the packet. So your first item should be a memo from me that summarizes two of the attachments that we're going to go over in detail. I'm going to have Julie and Mark do that in a couple of minutes. It also contains the staff recommendation on the back page. I'll return to that before we step into those two attachments. Attachment one is the first item we're going to go over in detail in a few minutes. That's basically a conceptual framework for how DNR intends is and intends to implement the recommendations you received in February. Attachment two, which got all of the attention and public comment, is the adaptive management proposal, which Mark will go over in detail. Attachment three is a narrative description of how the forest practices rules address unstable slopes. And I hope that you had the chance to read that because there are, I often bump up against misconceptions about how the rules work related to unstable slopes. And this is a summary of all the words in the rule book that I hope is more understandable to you. Attachment four is two chapters of WAC. One is a section, it's WAC 222-16050, in particular focus on the Class 4 special class of FPAs and what's contained there. And the reason we have that is because it overlaps with watershed analysis, which starts on page 3 of attachment 4. And that is the entire chapter of watershed analysis. In particular, on attachment 4, the focus a little later on in the discussion will be on page 13 of attachment 4, 222-22090, the use and review of watershed analysis. This is where the committee spent pretty much all its time focusing, and that's where the discussion later today will focus. Attachment 5 is a table showing the currently approved watershed analyses with the color code by primary sponsor. As you'll note here, we think the numbers, I think the committee members will recall, the numbers on these floated around a little bit throughout the time we were looking at this. And we think we have that nailed down pretty well now. 52 actual approved analyses covering 66 watershed administrative units. I particularly like to call your attention to the sponsor key in the first column there. This was referenced in some of the public comments. There are 14 watershed analyses where DNR Forest Practices was the primary sponsor. And the reason that is because, one, they were high priority, but two, many of these watersheds had multiple landowners and no primary landowner that was a large landowner. So DNR took the lead on those back in the watershed analysis days. The next page is the attachment you've seen in some of their testimony is the geographic representation of approved watershed analyses. Attachment six, and I don't need to do much here because I think Chris covered it. This is the section from the draft 2011 CEMA work plan related to the unstable slopes rule group and the work that is intended as part of that group. And as Chris pointed out, in particular on page 9, the mass wasting effectiveness monitoring program is explained, as well as the project descriptions and the status of those projects. Important to note that there are four projects in that program, and as Chris mentioned, one is nearly complete and one is set to go. And then the final attachment, of course, is the recommendations you received in February. So, questions on those? Yes?
Darren, just a quick question on the table, excuse me, particularly pertaining to the 14 that DNR conducted or sponsored. Can you give me a better idea on the composition of the landowners? I've heard a lot about the fact that there wasn't a major landowner. Can you expand on that and just tell us?
I'm sorry, I can't. Okay. Not right now. I just talking with Stephen, who was overseeing watershed analysis during that time frame. The primary reason was there were complex watersheds with multiple landowners, and just the other ones often had one or two primary sponsors that were a large landowner, owned most of the land in those units, so that's why they took the lead. In those other cases, that was not what was the case on the ground. But I can't give the details.
That's fine.
But we have to look into that, obviously, as we get into this process. But today we don't have it. Okay. All right. So, brief touchback on how we got here. So you've heard this before, and certainly the committee has heard it. But I thought it'd be useful just to do a brief refresh. So watershed analysis began in the early 90s. And was a means to assess cumulative effects within a specific geographic area, a watershed administrative unit, which DNR also designated, and provide prescriptions to address those effects that were determined through the analysis. Watershed analysis was not required, but it was incentivized by the board. Regulatory certainty was one incentive, and the limits on our conditioning authority was another incentive. So if landowners conducted these watershed analyses, they were given some level of regulatory certainty. The SEPA exemption that was mentioned is one of those. And then certainly the limits on DNR's conditioning authority was another. Many were initiated by landowners, approximately 38. And as I said, DNR Forest Practices administered the program. We sponsored about 14 of them. We provided training. We participated in the reviews that were conducted by others and had the primary responsibility for approving final watershed analyses. In the mid to late 1990s, focus started shifting towards the Endangered Species Act listing of anadromous fish and FFR negotiations. So the resources that were previously dedicated to watershed analysis started to shift towards that topic. Certainly adoption of the Forest and Fish Report by the legislature and the direction to implement that report pretty much completed that shift of resources towards implementing the emergency rules, developing the permanent rules, and implementing all the tools that were required, and directing resources toward the field personnel that were required to implement a much more complex set of regulations. So the watershed analysis program, although still on the books, was effectively not administered or not funded anymore by the department. As Chris mentioned, monitoring was not necessarily required. It was certainly a module was required, but implementation of that module was not. Now, as we've heard, many landowners picked up on that and did it anyway, particularly those that have HCPs and a monitoring requirement. But the rest of them, by and large, were not monitored by the department, and many were not reviewed. So this issue came to the fore, obviously, as a result of the December 2007 storm, and that's when this issue took off at the board level. If you recall back in, for many of you anyway, back in February of 2008, the board had a couple of meetings that launched this effort. The second meeting in February was where the board directed DNR staff to develop a storm work plan that had many elements, one of which was focused on watershed analysis. There was a technical group convened to take a look at watershed analysis and determine, try to make some recommendations as to its continued use. There was an in-depth operational review of how DNR is processing applications within WOWs where watershed analysis had been approved. So this was occurring all throughout 2008. In November of 2008 was when we had some first final products. We did not get a consensus recommendation from that technical group that was convened as to the continued use of watershed analysis. and we reported on our efforts or what we found as part of our research into how FPAs are processed. And we instituted some new guidelines at that time. We have a new sheet that is attached to the FPA that gathers additional information about watershed analysis as part of the processing. Now we're taking a harder look at each one of those FPAs that come in within a watershed analysis administrative unit. We took a look at all of the prescriptions that had been approved and divided them into the specific and non-specific category to make sure that DNR was implementing the rule correctly. If you recall, we're required to look at that when an FPA comes in, and if it has a specific prescription in an approved watershed analysis and that prescription is being applied, then it can proceed without the Class 4 special classification. If it is non-specific, then it can be classed as a Class 4 special classification. So we had to take a hard look at that and follow up with the regions to make sure that was being implemented correctly. And as we got into 2009, the issue of the continued use of watershed analysis was still being discussed at the board and being researched by staff. We came to you with a recommendation in March to initiate an adaptive management proposal, but there was not clarity nor consensus, at least in our view on the board, as to kind of the scope of that. So we came back in August of 2009 with what we thought was the scope, but we wanted to engage the board in some additional discussion on that, and that is when the board decided to form the committee. And the committee was charged with basically taking up this task and coming back to the board with recommendations, whether rulemaking would be required or not, whether continued use of watershed analysis was going to be okay or not, and that resulted in the recommendations coming to you in February. So, a little bit longer than I was hoping, but that's a long, and a lot of stuff happened over a long period of time, so I want to make sure that we were more or less starting from the same place. So I want to turn back to the memo, which is the first sheet in your packet. And as you, I think, read in the memo, we have two parts that we're going to focus on. Julie's going to focus
Excuse me, Darren. Yes. I'd just like to point out to the board that the next step, which is what is about to commence, was a discussion that the board had in its February meeting. And it was the board's direction that I, as the chair of the board and the commissioner, asked my staff to take the recommendation that came from the committee and then come back to the board today with a recommendation about how to implement those recommendations. So I just want to be clear that that's what has brought us to this point today. And so that's what Darren is going to deliver as the board requested at its last regular meeting.
So attachment one is, as I described earlier, what we are doing and intend to do. It does not require rulemaking. This was something that we believe is consistent with the recommendations that came to you in February. And as I think I described in February, the recommendations were really to the commissioner rather than to DNR, because there wasn't necessarily rulemaking involved. So the recommendations, as they're worded, say DNR should, but really it's the commissioner should consider. And we did talk about that, and we decided that what Julie's going to describe is how we can implement the recommendations without rulemaking. And then attachment two, of course, is what we think is necessary to complete this step. It's in the same theme as the recommendations, but it's not exactly as they are worded. And we'll describe why that is a little bit later. Again, our recommendation is that attachment two that's in the proposal be implemented. So I'm going to turn it over to Julie, and she'll take you through the chart.
Good morning, Commissioner, members of the board. So what you have before you on the flow chart really talks about our prioritization strategy as well as the review process and how we see that following once we get things implemented. The prioritization process will involve all 52 approved watershed analyses. And the criteria will recognize significant storm events that produce high numbers of landslides, public safety, the activity level that occurs within each of the watershed analysis areas, whether or not the original analysis had, they didn't have any mass wasting prescriptions for harvest or road construction, whether or not previous reviews have taken place, as well as stakeholder input. Just to kind of give you an idea of how we see that shaking out with regards to the prioritization, at the very high end, with the highest priority, are going to be those watershed analyses that have had a significant storm event that has produced a high number of landslides. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the low priority we see are those watershed analyses that have been having reviews, regular reviews, reviews that have been taking place in the past. Everything else will fall out somewhere in the middle. As we're developing the prioritization, we will be doing this with stakeholder input. Tend to work closely with our stakeholders as we develop and create a final formal prioritized list. Once that list has been formalized, it's published, the review process, what we're referring to as a standardized review process, will be initiated, and we will begin the reviews. And currently, we're still developing what those reviews are going to look like, identifying what the questions are going to be. And again, that process, once we have a pretty good idea of what we believe a robust review will look like, is as we will take that out and work closely with stakeholders, make sure that we're getting input before we completely finalize the review process. The timelines that we're thinking is we believe that by the August board meeting, we should have the formalized prioritized list ready for you. And then by the November board meeting, we fully anticipate to have the review process, standardized review process, finalized and ready to start implementing. The flow chart you'll see, you saw the high priority to the low priority scale. Kind of in the middle of the page is the performing of the standardized review process. Just a couple of points of note is this DNR fully intends we will be participating in and we'll be responsible for the final evaluation approval of that that review that occurs. Also, for those watershed analyses that have had significant storm events, we believe that there will be some additional questions that would be added to the core base of review questions that all watershed analyses will need to answer. We don't know what those look like yet, but again, we're continuing to develop and we'll be relying on stakeholder input as we develop those. One of the points that's important to note is that these reviews, they not only cover the prescriptions, but they will indeed cover the geographic area that the watershed analysis covers. Remote technologies have improved since the time of many of the analysis when they were completed. We believe there is a lot of opportunity for additional areas of potential instability that will be identified using the latest technology. A part of the review process, pretty much right at the top. So once a landowner is notified, here you are, here's a prioritization list, this is where you're at. We're going to start engaging with implementing the review process itself. The landowner at that time will be able to identify to us, they have three options, basically, what they could choose from. One option would be they could choose to withdraw their mass wasting prescriptions. We're not quite sure, you know, if how many landowners out there might be interested in this, but certainly we're thinking landowners who have 100% of non-specific mass wasting prescriptions might be interested in taking what we're referring to as an off-ramp, getting out of, and then what they would end up doing is adopting the standard rule identified landforms and then applying the avoidance mitigation strategies that that are developed as part of that. Another choice could be is that a landowner chooses to supplement existing mass wasting prescriptions with the forest practice rule identified landforms and avoidance mitigation strategy. An example of that might be is that a landowner has both specific and non-specific prescriptions for their analysis area, and they may choose for those non-specific prescriptions to supplement them and say, we're going to go ahead and rely on, use the standard rules, landforms, and then we will employ an avoidance mitigation strategy. The other option is to go through full review of all the prescriptions and with anticipated that they will either be modified and maintained, could be some modified, some maintained. Through each of those choices.
Excuse me, Tom has a question for you.
Thank you. You just listed three avenues. So how, which of those would cover the recent announcement, yesterday's announcement with Weyerhaeuser and DNR? What would you say that agreement is of the three that you just, pathways you just described?
Well, it's going to be either the middle one, where it's a full review, or it's going to be the one where it's supplements. Yeah, I'm not sure because I don't know the specific details, and I haven't had conversations yet with the landowner. But yeah, one of those two.
Okay.
Each, regardless of which option is chosen by the landowner, CEPA will be involved at the outcome of either the landowner deciding to withdraw all the prescriptions, or at the after the reviews are completed, the results will go through CEPA. So there will be a public comment process, a public review opportunity at that time. And again, the CEPA review in this context is looking at and reviewing the entire watershed analysis. The box that the box that's at the very bottom. I have draft on the ones that you have, and I made a few minor tweaks this morning to try to get a little bit better clarity with some of the conversations I've been having lately. So the really big box that you have down at the bottom that's really bolded, it's the FPA process and prior to and during reviews. This is what we are doing, you know, prior to, during a review. It's what we're doing today, currently, and, you know, there's two basic things that could play out is that we can apply our existing conditioning authority. You've seen, and we've had a lot of discussions about what DNR's existing conditioning authority is within approved watershed analysis area. It is fairly limited, although we have full authority to correct factual errors or if there was a resource that was not part of the analysis, we could of course provide conditioning authority over that. The other is to work very closely with the landowners on developing voluntary measures to provide some additional protection if we believe it's warranted. So there's the landowner can come, you know, forward on their own to make recommendations. They can propose an alternate plan. We can we can work through supplemental directives. Again, though, the bottom line is those are voluntary measures, and it will rely on us working very closely with the landowners to gain that. I wanted to try to address, Miguel had some questions pertaining to FPA processing. And what would the processes be? And there's one clarification that I would like to make with the scenarios that he had. He listed out three, and two of them referenced whether or not the prescriptions were up to date or whether they were, you know, not up to date, not current. The rule doesn't give us any authority with regards to making that valuation. It's the prescriptions that were approved as part of the original analysis stay in place until a review is completed, and any changes at that time would be reflected. But up until that time, it would be just what was original, part of the original part. So really the question for us in reviewing an application is whether or not there is specific or non-specific prescriptions. So the example is that we receive an application that comes in. And let's say that there's a landform type that was identified as part of the analysis, but the landform wasn't identified on a map. So the map that was done as part of the analysis didn't capture the particular landform, but we find it, or the landowner finds it. What do you do? So if there is a prescription that has been developed for that specific type of landform, and if that prescription happens to be specific it would be applied to that landform, and the landowner would get a Class 3 application. They would not have to go through SEPA. If that landform did not have, say if it had a non-specific prescription that was identified, it would go through SEPA because it's not specific. Same if a landform was identified that was never identified as part of the original watershed analysis. It's brand new, they didn't identify it, so there's really no prescriptions, there's nothing there. That would go through, it would have to be a core special and go through SEPA as well. So I'm hoping that that gets at the questions that Miguel had. If I think the other question he had is how does an application today, if there's no watershed analysis, if it's just under standard rules, how does that get processed? If it comes in, the landowner has identified that, hey, I have this potentially unstable landform. Here's my avoidance and or mitigation strategy that I'm going to apply to it. The DNR takes that and evaluates that and assesses whether or not we believe, one, that they've done an adequate job of identifying the potentially unstable landform, and that we agree with what they're proposing as either an avoidance strategy or a mitigation strategy, if we believe that that is going to provide appropriate protections. So I hope that helps answer the questions there. And that's pretty much what I have to kind of run you through. The flow chart, are there questions that I can answer?
More?
Yes, question, Julie. If there are multiple landowners within a given watershed analysis, it's been my understanding that a set of prescriptions is developed for the watershed, not landowner specific. So if an individual landowner came and said, we would like to adopt standard forest practices rules and rule identified landforms in lieu of whatever prescriptions are in place now, is that permissible under this scenario that you've just described, rather than doing it for the entire watershed?
We've talked about that. That is one of the challenges that we're facing in these watersheds that have multiple landowners. Our intent will be is that we will engage the landowners within the analysis area, and our hope will be is that we will be able to get complete consensus. The last thing that we want, and I'm sure anybody wants, is that where we have complicated, you know, an area even more to where some landowners are following prescriptions, other landowners are not following prescriptions. But we need to have more discussion on that before we're able to really know what pathway we'll be walking down.
Okay. And partial answer to your question, Dave. Marilyn Ring is one of those owners in a DNR-sponsored watershed analysis. It's probably the largest one that was ever done. It's got six wows in it, and it includes a whole bunch of Forest Service land, a whole bunch of state land, I think some Rainier property, some Marilyn Ring property, and I have no idea who else is specifically. That's the Solduck.
Is that up here in the corner?
It's one of those. I don't think it's all of those necessarily. I'd have to look and see. But yeah, it's a complex one, and unfortunately, it's also one of the ones that has the least specificity in prescriptions and even mapping. So, you know, it's definitely one that we would want to pursue. However, as a company, we might want to pursue changing how we do things. But we can't necessarily control what happens on the other 250,000 acres in that watershed analysis. It's an enormous one. We've got 3,000 acres in it, so it's of an interest to find a way to piecemeal these if possible.
So if there are no other immediate questions, let's...
Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Who is that, please?
This is Dave Summers.
Yes, Dave.
Quick question. For watershed analyses that are part of the land-based HCP, do you think the review process at that middle box would be able to respect those watershed analyses that have had reviews, or how will that work?
Well, our anticipation with the ones that have been current and where the landowners are continuing to do the reviews, you'll see that those fell out low on our priority list to be able to be looking and reviewing those. And our intent is that we're going to be working very closely with those landowners and developing the timeline and coordinate the timeline. So I don't think either Dan or Mark are anticipating that that this is really going to require them to do much different with their current planning regime that they've got. We certainly will be, again, the point is that we're going to be developing a standardized review process. So we'll be ensuring to, you know, that the questions that are being asked in those reviews are the same that that will be asked during a, you know, regular standardized review that all other landowners are expected to be addressing.
Thank you.
I guess I would add to that, the comments you heard from Bill this morning is that we're fine with that. We fully anticipate working very closely with the services on, in any of those cases where we have an HCP in play, a landowner-based HCP.
Other questions on the presentation thus far?
Well, I just have sort of a scope thing. There are numbers all through here. And so this is, I'm trying to figure out how many areas we're actually talking about when you back out stuff. So there are 52 WAs and that's 66 watershed analysis units.
Administrative units.
Yeah, administrative, yeah. And so how many of those 52 do have HCPs on? Approved HCPs?
I think there are, if I remember correctly, there are 17 administrative units that are associated with HCPs. I've got that information there somewhere. If you give me just a second.
Yes, thank you. So we have six landowner HCP holders that have approved analysis. We've got West Fork, Plum Creek, Green Diamond, DNR State Lands, Tacoma Public Utilities, and Broughton.
So if I could, I think there was one other question that was asked during the comment period about resources. I think the point was made that during the formative years in the early 90s, that DNR had a considerable budget that was in place while these analyses were being put in place. And I think the question was, what about this review process rolling forward? Do we have the capacity?
Yes, that is a good question. I had intended to address that. That is correct. I think Miguel's numbers were right, that about $3 million per biennium devoted to the watershed analysis program. However, that was focused on conducting the level one, level two assessments, which are much more exhaustive process than a review. And we were primary sponsors on many watershed analyses. So we had several roles. We had to administer the program, including developing all the standards, procedures, and methodologies. We had to sponsor several watershed analyses. We had to provide training, which was very detailed and pretty lengthy. And then, of course, we had to evaluate those that were completed by others. So it was a much bigger program, but I'm not gonna try to tell you that this isn't gonna be a challenge for us. The flow chart, which is what we are intending to do, will stretch us thin, but it's not going to be a constant flow like it was when we were conducting the original watershed analysis. We expect it to ebb and flow a little bit, but it's going to be somewhat of a trade-off. We believe we have the capacity to do it if we don't have to lead reviews across several watershed analyses. That's why we think the adaptive management proposal is necessary, because we don't have a ready solution for those at this moment. So we can deal with the review of reviews that are conducted by others and the training that would need to be done in order for those reviews to be launched to make sure everybody's conducting it the same way, including developing the standardized review process and performing the evaluation, the oversight of the final evaluation and approval. We think we can handle that. But anything beyond that, we're going to be trading off too much risk. So that's why we think the proposal is necessary.
Dave?
Quick question, and this gets back to my previous question about the DNR-sponsored watershed analyses and the number of landowners, et cetera, because it seems like when you have a large number of landowners and no major landowner, that presented a problem potentially back when the original analyses were done. What I'm wondering is whether or not landowners could kind of come together in a cooperative fashion to kind of co-sponsor whatever that workload and economic issue might entail in order to kind of defray the costs and reduce the cost to any one landowner, but they could come together, you know, to try to get this done. And that's kind of what I was leading to, is trying to figure out if that was a possibility, how it might work, or if it just is not an option.
No, I think we need to be flexible. Even if the board decides to advance the proposal, it's going to take some time to work through the process. So we need to be flexible to try to accomplish as much work as we can in the meantime.
Julie?
I just wanted to make a clarification for Carolyn's question. We have the 6 ACP landowner holders, but it does cover 17 approved watershed analyses.
So that would, I would subtract 6 or 17 from 52?
Right, 17 from the 52.
And in addition, would I subtract 14?
Well, actually, let me clarify. You wouldn't subtract, right? That 52 is all going to be on a shared list, a prioritized list, right? Those 17 will probably fall out at the bottom of that list.
Right. What I'm trying to do is try to figure out which ones are in the highest risk and the sort of middle risk. Just trying to get a sense of scale, so following up on the staffing capability issue.
We have not yet had the time to look at each one in detail to be able to provide that. That is something that we're working towards and should have for you, again, at the latest by August, at the August board meeting, but that's where we're heading to with getting the prioritized list put out. It'll give you a better flavor of which buckets have how many analyses are basically falling out into each bucket. But the one that we can say for sure is with the landowner ACPs.
And then the 14 that DNR led, they've not had reviews either, because somebody reported that there was only one full review that had been accomplished.
Well, I won't claim that our records on status of reviews is completely up to date. That's another piece of information we have to verify. But our records indicate that there are approximately 10 reviews that have been done covering about 9 or 10 reviews that have been done covering about 11 or 12 wows. I think what you heard in the public comment was the date of those reviews.
Oh, okay.
So is there further presentation then?
I think we're done with the chart unless there's additional questions.
I just have a comment from the commissioner. Julie, I want to thank you for the detail that you went into in this attachment. I found it very helpful. And also to staff for staying as close to the subcommittee's recommendations that you did, because I think those of us that sat on the committee put a lot of time and energy and thought into what we thought would be next first steps. We've come a long way since a year and a half ago as far as identification and a process of which to get back with the rule, get these reviewed, see what the risk actually is out on the landscape. Obviously, if you look at the folks that have HCPs, their ownerships of forest land is right up there, a considerable amount. So those folks doing the reviews and so forth gives me another confidence level. The work that you folks have done and presented to the board gives me another level of confidence that these are going to be reviewed, they're going to be looked at, and then if there's a problem identified, that will give the board an opportunity to come back and have a discussion about that. I really would like to see the CEMA reports in our hands before we went into any major rulemaking. So that kind of sticks in my head too. When I hear Chris talk about one's close, the other one's been scoped and will be kicked off. So we're going to have some good information here before too long, which I think at that point the board can make better decisions about what the impact of the risk is to the resource. But thank you for your presentation. It was great.
Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark and members of the board. As you've heard, we've put a lot of time into putting together this process to meet the recommendations that the board discussed at the February meeting. It was acknowledged during in the recommendations that there may be a need for rulemaking. The process that we're implementing to assure all watershed analysis mass wasting prescriptions are reviewed and current relies heavily on voluntary cooperation from landowners. So staff believes that in order to assure that the mass wasting prescriptions remain current for the long term, that the board should consider rulemaking. These rules fall under the aquatic resources and would be part of the forest and fish rules. And so in order to consider rulemaking, the board needs a recommendation for the adaptive management program. Therefore, staff has prepared an adaptive management proposal initiation packet to gather additional information to determine if the rule should be strengthened to address two issues. The packet is your attachment 2 in your big packet. And in order to initiate a proposal, we need to provide information for 5 questions that are listed in the adaptive management board manual. The questions that are before the board, or that the board would move to take to policy, would be under number 2. And number 2 identifies 2 issues. The first is that, and again, we did an exhaustive review of the watershed analysis rules in Chapter 22 of the WAC, and we found that both issues would reside in 222-22090. The first issue is that the rules place an onus on the DNR to perform watershed analysis reviews, and that entities with interest in maintaining watershed analysis mass wasting prescriptions should be responsible for conducting reviews and keeping watershed analysis prescriptions current. To reinforce the concept that watershed analysis needs to be kept up to date is the first issue that the board would bring forward to policy. And the second is to specify the entities with interest in maintaining watershed analysis mass wasting prescriptions are responsible for doing the reviews. That's the questions that we posed under this issue. The second issue is that 222-22090 does not explicitly provide DNR the authority to withdraw prescriptions if reviews are not completed, or to supplement prescriptions if necessary prior to and during a review. So the question the board could pose to policy would be to give the DNR authority to supplement mass wasting prescriptions if necessary prior to and during the review process. And again, as Julie brought forward on the flow chart, one of the options that a landowner would have would be to supplement existing mass wasting prescription with forest practice rules for the avoidance or mitigation strategy. And the example she gave would be that a landowner has both specific and non-specific prescriptions, and that the landowner could voluntarily supplement the non-specific prescriptions by incorporating the rules. What this would do would be to give the DNR the ability to supplement those non-specific prescriptions during the review process. And as board member Lowry asked for, is to provide the DNR that regulatory backstop during the review process. The second thing would be to give the DNR the authority to withdraw mass wasting prescription within WOWs in which required reviews are not being completed. Again, in the short term, landowners are coming forward on a voluntary basis in order to make sure that all 52 approved watersheds are current. But the rules recommendations are for a long-term solution to mass wasting prescriptions. So, in this case, it would give the DNR authority where, on the example that Julie gave, where landowners who have 100% non-specific mass wasting prescriptions, if they choose not to conduct a review, and we've prioritized the reviews and
ask for them to be completed. This would give the DNR the opportunity to remove all of, or withdraw all the mass wasting prescriptions. And again, the proposal initiation is the first step. This is not rulemaking yet. It would be allowing the adaptive management program to review potential recommendations to strengthen the rules for the board to consider when the policy brings forward these recommendations. Staff has prepared this proposal for your consideration, and I got way ahead of myself. So, staff recommends the board advance the watershed analysis mass wasting prescription proposal to the adaptive management program administrator. We also recommend that the board allow policy to prioritize the proposal within its existing work list, and that the board ask the adaptive management program administrator to provide reports to the board at each regular meeting regarding the status of the proposal and an estimated timeline for response from policy. Are there any questions?
One thing I want to add to Mark's comments, the examples he provided are not the only cases where we would be looking to these, the potential to, for the rulemaking, for the need, for the potential for DNR to use these tools. It's really, it really would fall under a variety of cases, but the bottom line would be where we don't have a review that's being conducted for whatever reason. And no matter what the situation is with the prescriptions, how many are specific or non-specific, if we think there's high enough risk and a review is not being conducted for whatever reason, then we think we should have a tool to supplement those prescriptions until a review is conducted. If we have good reason to believe that a review will never be conducted, then we would want a tool that would allow us to remove those prescriptions. I just want to make sure I put a sharp point on that.
So in the bold on page 2, does not explicitly provide you. So is there any implicit authority that you have that?
Well, yes, we are relying on it to make attachment 1 work.
Right.
The rule is silent. So the attachment 1, we're relying on what authority we do have, implicit or explicit, and the cooperation of landowners and others to get the job done. But the rule is really silent. So it doesn't really give us, if we have that case developed where a review is just not getting done for whatever reason and we think there's high risk, we don't have an explicit tool to deal with that.
So let's be clear here then for the board. This is only about making sure that we, DNR, have the ability to make sure that the watershed analysis review happens. And that if it doesn't, on a voluntary basis, that DNR can make sure that the current rules apply. That's correct.
Yes.
So it's not about a different standard. It's about just making sure that current rules are applied if the voluntary process is not working. And I also want to underline the fact that we're not initiating, there is no contemplation of initiating rulemaking today. And that through adaptive management, all the caucuses will have ample opportunity to give input through adaptive management into what course of action should proceed. So staff is only recommending that we initiate a process that will require collaborative interaction before anything comes back to the board. So landowners' concerns will be addressed, the conservation caucus concerns can be addressed, any tribal concerns will be addressed, state caucus concerns. It's, again, it's a consensual process that occurs before anything comes back to this board.
Question for Darren. Did you folks think at all about putting these issue 1 and issue 2 back to the subcommittee as opposed to going to policy?
Not completely. Being honest with you,
I thought about it, but it's not something that we talked about with everyone, about reconvening the committee and
Within the committee, we discussed these two items a lot.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. And I don't know how Tom and David feel, but, I have a little ownership in this now, with the time I put into it. I'd rather that committee take another look at these two issues, if we could come back to staff with a reasonable suggestion that helps us through this, as opposed to, putting it to another group that has not had the discussions about the issues that we have.
Clearly the board's prerogative. No question.
When it's appropriate, I'd like to get this on the table before, so I'd like to make a motion. But I don't want to cut off the question and answer.
I think it might be appropriate because there's going to be a lot of questions and answers around whatever motion you propose.
Yeah. Okay. So
can I make sure that I throw out a couple more points? So if you read the memo, the recommendation at the bottom of the page or on the back of the page suggest that you advance this proposal to policy, but it doesn't put an explicit timeline on it, as some have suggested would be a good idea. We did that purposely, knowing that there are many landowners interested in attachment one and making that work, as are we. And we also know that forest and fish policy is full up with work right now, have many competing high priorities, and that this is a fairly complex and contentious issue. And we thought it would be appropriate to put it on the work list, have policy deliberate over what the priority should be, knowing that they probably aren't going to get to it right away, but could get to it in the coming months. And that would give opportunity for the process in attachment one to play out. And we could make some good progress in that intervening time. But we think it's important to at least initiate the proposal and get the process started. We may find that through over the course of time that the need diminishes, but we think it's important to initiate.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make a motion and speak to the motion if it gets seconded. So I'd like to move that the board adopt the draft memorandum to the adaptive management administrator from the chair of the board as proposed by staff in attachment two.
Can you read that?
Pardon me?
Can you reread it, please?
I propose that the board adopt the draft memorandum provided in our packet, attachment two, to the adaptive management administrator from the chair of the board relating to the watershed analysis, mass wasting intersections. So
that's just the title. Do you have it written down?
I don't have it written down. I'm just reading off the top of our memo.
Did I have a second?
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Could I clarify the motion? Is this a recommendation to move this to get this to the adaptive management program for review and recommendation?
I want to clarify.
The program administrator.
I want to clarify something.
Let's get a clarification here from staff.
The memo, attachment two, is a proposal, adaptive management proposal from the board to the adaptive management administrator. The administrator has a job, as outlined in Board Manual 22, to answer additional questions and make a recommendation to policy. So that's the official
so
process.
So it goes through the adaptive management?
Yes.
To policy.
Did you hear that, Dave?
Yeah, so it is to give it to the adaptive management program manager.
That's correct.
May I speak to it?
Well, Dave, you should see the attachment in your board material.
No, I have the attachment. I was just, your motion just said that we had adopted, and I just wanted to make clear that we are forwarding on to policy for initiation of discussion.
That would be a more accurate description, I think. Advance the proposal to the administrator.
Okay. To the administrator, not to policy.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, excuse me.
Thank you for that.
Okay, so we have a motion properly supported by Carolyn. Discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to support the motion. I think the committee that we put together did excellent work, and their recommendations, I think, are things we all support, but it did identify a problem in the recommendation five that the conditioning authority of DNR is extremely limited. And the fact that, I wholly believe in the watershed analysis process, and I just want to say hi to Jeff Light, because he was there at the beginning, too, for many hours.
He waved back at you.
We have a problem here that we've got a process and a system that hasn't been adequately supported, and we have a problem with conditioning authority. And I don't think sending this back to committee is going to solve those issues. We've identified them, and they are sort of legal issues that need, as the staff says, some rulemaking. And so I think this proposal by staff is well put together. It's the right way to go. It will give all stakeholders adequate participation and chances to comment and form any rule recommendations. And so I just commend the staff, and I wholeheartedly support the motion.
All right, thank you. I believe Tom had some further comments.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry to maybe be a little bit repetitious here, because a number of people have said things that Sherry has, and Dave just did too. But I've been listening very carefully and taking some notes. I wanted to remind folks that the subcommittee started off with, I think, two major goals. And one of them was to not penalize those folks that were invested in watershed analysis and working in good faith and been following through with it. So we didn't want to pull the rug out from under people that were doing the right thing. The other piece of it is we wanted to make sure that all of them were being kept up to date, all the watershed analyses. And to utilize DNR's authority to make sure they are, if it's necessary, to protect public resources or until they're brought up to date. And in that piece, we found a lack of clarity in the rule that Darren was talking to, and we've had a little bit of discussion about, that we're concerned could thwart DNR's oversight role, the backstop that I have been talking a lot about all the way through this. And that's a big chunk of what this referral is about. Today, in our public testimony, we heard a couple of things. First, general agreement with DNR's work plan for reviewing watershed analyses. And I think that is just great. I want to commend DNR on stepping up to this in a comprehensive and coordinated fashion. It just feels very good. So, Sherry, I agree with your comments that it's very satisfying to see the work from the subcommittee become effectuated pretty quickly, and I appreciate that. I heard some concern in the testimony about clarification of HCPs. We had some discussion about that. I think that's going to happen working with staff. And then just Darren was just talking about DNR's resources for oversight and its capacity, and there was concern about that. And I think there will be ongoing issues perhaps associated with that, but the board will be kept informed as we work on it. In terms of taking a look at shoring up DNR's oversight ability, there were a number of things that were said today. There was concern that it would delay the process, that it's not needed now, that we should be working with stakeholders first, and it's too fast and too soon. And if any of that was the case, I would be concerned as well, but I don't see it that way. This is not a rule initiation. We're not going ahead with a 101 and just have a little bit of discussion about that. This is just a referral to a fairly cumbersome, long adaptive management program, and I think that's why we need to do that today, not wait for another emergency to happen or wait until a problem appears. This is a referral to a stakeholder collaborative process, and if you read the memo, it says we're asking the adaptive management program to consider concepts for possible rule revisions. I mean, it's a pretty broad charge. We're not trying to tie anybody's hands. I think we're going to learn a lot as we implement this. So there's some real opportunity to get back, I think, pretty specific recommendations. Not broad ones, but ones that are will be very practical based on the experience that we're going to be having over the next year. If you look at the draft memo, the two issues that are presented in bold, under number two, it says possible rule revisions. The board could add provisions. So it really isn't limiting. And if something else is needed in this context that isn't spelled out here, adaptive management process can come back to us with that. If these turn out not to be needed for some reason, I mean, we may find a number of folks were saying that this, their belief that it won't be needed. Well, that's certainly an appropriate response. My understanding from the adaptive management co-chairs is that the earliest this could be on their agenda is sometime after December. Now, we may want to bring them up and ask about that. But it seems to me we're talking about a year stakeholder process here. Or, excuse me, a year before the board would be getting something back. I guess that wouldn't all be stakeholders. Adaptive management wouldn't be able to get to it right away. But I think that's plenty of time for the collaborative process to work, for the stakeholder process to work, and for us to take a look at what's coming out of CMER per Sherry's comments in terms of other studies that might be relevant. We could get a recommendation back from adaptive management that we ought to wait for some of these other studies and pair it up for some rule action that could be coordinated. And hopefully our experience would be showing that it is the reviews, people are stepping up to the reviews and updating them. The watershed analysis. So there's no urgency around it. So, I mean, it just seems to me that there's quite a breadth of options that could be coming back to us. But we need to start now in order to have that in place rather than wait for an urgency. So thank you.
And thank you for those comments, Tom. I just want to point out to the board that perhaps the timeline that you sketched out is even overly ambitious. Because if I understand correctly, the co-chairs have told us they won't even start to consider it until perhaps late this year. So if then you think about the collaborative process and what adaptive management might take to deal with this issue, it could be another year or more. So we're probably looking at no less than a year and a half or two even before anything comes back to us. And as Tom has said, there will be ample opportunity for there to be dialogue amongst the caucuses within adaptive management as to how this voluntary process is unfolding. So I think we're looking at a very lengthy process here. It's not something that's going to happen within a year. Dave?
Just a quick comment. I, too, thank staff for especially the attachment one flow chart. I think that paints a really good picture. It's complete, thorough, and what I see value, especially in that, is in regards to the options that the landowners have. You know, I was heavily involved with the Taylor Checker Spot butterfly management plan concept, a non-rule approach, voluntary, so to speak. And I see a lot of merit in those kinds of approaches, and this one seems to embody that as well. It gives landowners a few choices to do the reviews or to withdraw or supplement, et cetera. And I think that creates a lot of flexibility to all the landowners to deal with the issues they need to deal with. And also with the heightened sensitivity around landslides and mass wasting, I would assume and expect that attachment one would be utilized to a large extent. And that during this process through adaptive management and policy, et cetera, that we would gain a lot of information on how things are going and the relative need. So I like this approach. It seems to cover a lot of bases.
Norm?
Mr. Chairman?
Doug
Stinson?
Okay, go ahead.
Let him go.
I heard a lot of people at public comment taking a different approach on this. And the things I heard is that implementing existing rules would be a good way to go, and working with the landowners would be another good way to go, And so I think maybe we're passing up real opportunity here when we have the landowners making this much effort to want to participate. I really don't think we need to put the part in there for the potential rulemaking at this time. Let's give this a chance to work. So that's where I'm coming from on it.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Norm?
Thank you, Commissioner. There's an awful lot in this report that I really appreciate, and particularly the attachment one that sets out a process that we can implement immediately. And appreciate all that you've done to bring that forward to us. Due to the short time frame that we've had since this report came out, what I'm bringing up now, I've not had a chance to vet with too many of the board members or with the commissioner. And so it would have been preferable, I think, to have had a chance to maybe discuss some areas of concern prior to them coming forward at this meeting, maybe bring some options. Unfortunately, again, because of time constraints, we didn't have that opportunity. So I have...
Norm, excuse me, let me make clear. Are you speaking to the motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
So what I am going to distribute is a proposal that I will put in the form of a motion for amendment to the staff report, and it includes some areas of clarification that I think will help this process. It will include some areas where we have some disagreement, but this was the only way that we could see to bring this up at this late point in time. So I will pass this around and give them to staff as well.
Mr. Chair, for those of us on the phone, we need something.
Yes. So I think you're going to have to read it.
I will do that. I'll be happy to do that.
But I encourage you to make this in the form of a motion for amendment.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what I intend to do. I wanted to wait until everyone had it in front of them. So I move that the staff report that has been previously moved as being forwarded to the adaptive management administrator be amended in issues 1 and issue 2 as is stated on this page, which has just been handed out. I'd
be
happy
to. Corrections to the existing language, Norm?
Is there are. Pardon me?
Can you make corrections to the existing language?
There are some changes to the existing language in that report, and there are some additions. I'll be happy to go over those. Would you like me to go through that before looking for a second?
Well, I think we need to know what the motion is.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify. We had a draft motion prepared that is consistent with Board Member Lowry's intent.
Okay.
So I want to make sure we're starting and everyone is clear where we're starting from here. So we had that motion rejected, and I'm not sure if this is an amendment to that motion or this
yes.
is simply amending the proposal. If it's amending the motion, you might want to take up the original motion first and then see if you need to proceed to an amendment.
Thanks.
I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I think it's appropriate to propose an amendment
yes.
to the motion. And since the motion included language, I think it's okay. My interpretation of the rules would say it's okay to propose an amendment to the existing language, and then we can vote on whether we want to adopt that amendment or not.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. So let me go through these, and again, I apologize, but because of the time frame, we did not have opportunity to have discussion about this before this meeting. In issue 1, and I'll try to highlight the changes.
Yeah, where you can, I assume you have some, it looks to me like you have some changes to issue 1.
Yes.
And some changes to issue 2.
Right.
If you could highlight what those changes are to the existing language, I think that would be appropriate.
Right. Okay. In issue number 1, as per the motion that I have just suggested, the change is at the very end of the sentence, the issue number one sentence, where it says initiating reviews and period. And in the staff report, it has for conducting reviews and keeping watershed analysis prescriptions current. That portion, conducting reviews, to the end of that sentence would be stricken and replaced with initiating reviews. And I'll go through these, and then if I could have a chance to speak through them, I would appreciate
that. So is that clear to those of you who are remotely connected what the proposal is?
Yeah.
Doug, I'm sorry, Dave, did you get
that? I think yes.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. The first bullet in the staff report is not changed at all. The second one is modified.
So, excuse me, Norm, what you're doing is expanding things for the adaptive management.
Yes.
To be thinking about.
Yes.
To respond to us.
Okay. Exactly. The big change in the second bullet is, again, that it refers to the initiation of the review rather than doing or conducting the review. There is a third bullet added that encourages DNR and stakeholders to develop a quick update process for watershed analysis that expedites the review process, especially where the landowner agrees to replace or supplement existing prescriptions with rule-identified landforms and current standard rules for unstable slopes. This is similar to what I think the agreement that has just been put in place between Weyerhaeuser and the DNR and others would certainly contemplate. It's that quick update that is the focus of this, that it would be a much simplified process and one that we could do, really move through this and get our work done. The fourth is that watershed analyses that contain multiple landowners may have reviews that cover individual landowners without affecting prescriptions or review requirements of other landowners. This is the point that I brought up during the staff discussion. On issue number two, the issue number two language itself is unchanged. The bullet points are somewhat different. Give DNR the authority to withdraw mass wasting prescriptions within WOWs in which the required reviews are not being initiated within a stakeholder consensus timeline. This is to provide some clarity on that are prescriptions current or not. And when then the DNR could apply conditions. First bullet in the staff report was deleted in this amendment. There's a second bullet that is added then, and it would say that landowners will be encouraged to utilize the alternate plan process to achieve resource protection where prescriptions have not been effective. This, I don't think, takes rule language. It's part of the adaptive management process. The other thing that, and I'm sorry I failed to mention, under issue number one on the staff report, after the issue description, it says possible rule revisions. We have suggested that this is an adaptive management consideration. It may not result in a rule revision. There may be other processes there that could apply. And the same thing then under issue number two, rather than possible rule revisions, it's stated that it's an adaptive management consideration that may result in a rule, may not. Those are my recommendations as a motion to amend the original motion.
Can I ask a question? Why did you leave out the supplemental language?
Well, we have some concerns with that, but I think maybe it'd be more appropriate to discuss that in discussion time.
Second. Okay, we have a motion properly supported to amend the staff recommendation as described. Discussion on this amendment.
Commissioner, may I just speak to the motion just a little bit, and then I would be happy to either answer questions or
I'd like a clarification on the motion before you talk
sure.
about its virtues. So you were saying basically strike from issue one to the word completed at the bottom of issue two,
and
strike the whole thing and replace it with this.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I meant.
Yes. Okay.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brad.
No, go ahead.
All right. Part of what we heard this morning in testimony, you heard that landowners have conducted reviews. Weyerhaeuser has voluntarily agreed to initiate reviews in a collaborative process. The concern with the issue number one, as it was written in the staff report, appears to shift some of that responsibility, maybe too much of that responsibility, from the Department of Natural Resources to the landowner. Particularly if it's, as maybe was contemplated, and maybe it's just the wording that needs to be changed, the landowner, as we hear, is ready to initiate reviews. Landowners that I've talked to, a lot of them, are ready to initiate reviews. However, it's not a landowner process. It's a DNR process. It's a DNR regulatory process, and it's a process that's laid out in law which we cannot control. So if it's our responsibility to conduct the review, but we have no control over the process, it's sort of like writing a blank check and an open time frame, and having no ability to control how that works. We are happy to initiate, that is, raise our hand and say, we will do this job. We are happy to bring our experts and our staff to the table. But we recognize that it is a stakeholder and a DNR regulatory process. So it's not something that we can just conduct. And that's a big part of why that amendment is proposed.
Excuse me right there, Norm, for just a moment. Let me ask staff, is that correct in the sense that landowners cannot initiate their own review at this time?
They can, but I think Board Member Shaw, as I understand the description Board Member Shaw is laying out, I think we're fine with that. I'm okay with the initiate the review, because he's correct, DNR will still have to administer the process, and it is a stakeholder process.
Okay.
So it's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, we agree that that the watershed analyses need to be kept up to date. That was part of our recommendations that came forward in a consensus. We think that this gets into issue number two, that there needs to be a timeline, because that up-to-date is not really defined. I would guess that there are probably some in this room that would say that up-to-date, you know, if it was done 5 or 10 years ago, it's okay. Others that may say if it wasn't done since the last storm event, it's not up-to-date. And so I think that's the reason for adding that language within a stakeholder defined timeline process.
You're talking about the first bullet under issue number two.
Yes. Okay. Right. That it just helps to add some clarity to the adaptive management program that this up to date is not just a strict definition, wasn't done last year. It there are degrees of being up to date and being out of date, and that should be a stakeholder process. Final issue in this, I think, and it gets to, I can't remember whose question about removing the authority to the bullet that was the authority to supplement mass wasting prescriptions prior to and during the review process. Is an area that's without a lot of definition or control. We have done these watershed analyses in good faith. We adopted these prescriptions in good faith. They went through SEPA in good faith. And there was a reason why that conditioning authority was limited, because they had gone through that full analysis and through SEPA at the time in which they were adopted. And we think that that should be honored until that review process is has been completed. And then if additional changes need to be made, that it's appropriate to be made at that time. Those are the significant points about this proposed motion.
All right. Any, yes, Fred.
I understand that the motion and the amendment to the motion this morning do not initiate rulemaking, but I have to say I've been struck this morning by testimony that speaks to the 3 days availability of information and request for postponement on the one hand, and then on the other, I've heard where it could be 1 to 2 years before a policy committee could even get to this, and then there's the evaluation of it. So I'm concerned that we may be missing an opportunity for collaboration by not granting a postponement in regard to the fact that, in particular with the amendment and the amount of information that, not that I don't support the substance of the motion necessarily, but I'm concerned about the collaborative element and the number of testimonies we heard this morning that speak to not having enough time to work the issue among the different caucuses, and just wanted to register that concern related to the process in general. In particular, given the amount of time that it may be before the policy committee even takes this up. So that's my comment.
All right. Thank you. Other comment about the amendment? Let's speak to the amendment, please.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead, please, on the phone.
Since I don't have this in front of me, I'm at a disadvantage, and I guess I'll just state a little objection to that. But I'm concerned that it appears the amendment restricts the ability of the adaptive management process and policy to, you know, explore options. And I think all we're doing today is sending this off to this collaborative stakeholder process, and I want that process to have flexibility in what solutions they come up with and recommend back to us. Not, I don't think it's appropriate at this point to be eliminating possibilities of what they might recommend. So I will express a little puzzlement at the anxiety that sending this to the stakeholder process and the collaborative process seems to be causing some people, because that's exactly it seems to me we're giving folks exactly what they want. We're sending it to the formal process we adopted many years ago for involving all stakeholders in this adaptive management, and it seems entirely appropriate to me to forward this on to go through that stakeholder process.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else on the phone? All right. Then anybody here? Sherry?
Well, Dave, I would respectfully disagree with you. If you've been in the forest and fish policy collaboration in the last 5 or so years, you would understand why there would be a major concern from individual stakeholders, particularly as with Brad said. As Brad, I agree with you 100% that not receiving this information until late Monday night, I believe, is a disservice to our ability to make good, solid decisions. This is a very important issue. It's not lightly taken, I don't think, by anyone in this room on all sides. And I asked for this meeting to be canceled, which that was, I got a no on, obviously, because we're all here. Because I felt it was very unfair for this board to have to make this quickly, particularly when it more or less did not follow exactly the guidelines that came out of the subcommittee. I think Attachment 1 did a good job. I'm not sure Attachment 2 did. But I certainly would support Norm's changes to Attachment 2. But I actually might even have to vote on it.
All right. Any other input? Tom?
Sure. speaking to Norm's proposed amendment, the changes to issue number one, I think, are all good. I like the way that you've sort of broadened the considerations that we're asking for, and certainly the quick update process, you know, that would be great. Hopefully it won't be needed, because by the time adaptive management gets to it, any folks will have taken advantage of something that staff will have put together for quick updates. But, you know, if we still need it by then, I think that's all good. It seems to me that the changes in issue number two have some problems potentially associated with it, and that's, I think Dave said it pretty well, is I don't feel good about, I guess I don't understand why we wouldn't be interested in adaptive management's thinking about DNR being able to condition a mass policing prescription that was out of date. I do understand what your point is, you know, well, what is out of date, and you put in the consensus timeline in there. That's a way to kind of get at that question, but it seems that what you're what this would say is give DNR the ability to withdraw it all together if a review is not happening under some kind of timeline. It seems like conditioning is some middle ground there that could be beneficial to a landlord rather than withdrawing. So in the interest of getting the broadest perspective back from Ann, I would think we'd want to keep that included.
Carolyn?
Sort of where I was going. I had a couple of comments on the amendment. I like the reconstructing to call it adaptive management considerations. I think that's a lot clearer what we're really trying to do. And I like the idea about the initiating. That seems like a useful clarification. So, but the supplementing, I mean, that's my concern too. The middle ground between just withdrawing or, you know, a lateral shift over to an alternate plan. So, you know, we really should make this as comprehensive, so do this once. And I have principles in conflict on this whole thing, might as well just say. One is process stuff. That's a principle that is problematic for me. But on the other hand, having been involved in voluntary efforts in natural resource areas in the past, I know how important it is for them to work to have not only incentives but disincentives and the backstop notion and so forth. And so the principle for me is a balance between something that looks regulatory and something that looks voluntary and really comes out of responsible action by stakeholders, people involved in a collaborative process. So that's where I'm sort of coming down. It's clear from the testimony that we've got today and the discussion that we're having on both things in front of us right now that this thing's still sort of maturing. So I'm sort of wondering, like Tom, you know, why that middle piece was taken out of number two. And then my second question was your last bullet under number one. Is it legal to break up? I think it makes sense. I would like to be able to see that be possible. But is it legal to break up the, both the units and the, if it's within a unit, and also the watershed analysis itself? That's a question.
That may be a better question to staff than to me.
Yes, certainly. Probably not something we would prefer, because administratively it makes it more difficult to deal with.
Excuse me, Darren, maybe I ought to just read that bullet for the folks on the phone.
Oh, of course. So the fourth bullet.
Yeah, we have been provided copies, or I have. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, great.
Good. The last bullet under issue number one, watershed analyses that contain multiple landowners may have reviews that cover individual landowners without affecting the prescriptions or review requirements of other landowners. The rule does provide
an opportunity to conduct reviews on smaller units within a watershed administrative unit. So it's, you can do that. It's just that from our perspective, it's obviously more difficult to deal with. But it's allowed under current rule.
And okay, so that doesn't run then in conflict with the whole cumulative effect, larger scale.
Well, it could.
Focus.
It could.
And my intent there, again, if I could, is that in a watershed in which there are multiple landowners, if there's a single set of prescriptions and one landowner that is perfectly willing to adopt rule-identified land forms, for example, and standard rules, and another one that is not, you know, how do they approach that? And this would allow for there being a difference in those processes that I don't think specifically exists in the current law. When watershed analyses were initiated, any landowner with 10% or more could start the watershed analysis. Well, that's not a very large threshold, but by being started, everybody else within that watershed got sucked in whether they wanted to or not, and that would be subject to those prescriptions. Now, it wasn't that anybody with 10% looked to control the other 90. I'm not implying that, but everybody got drawn in. I think this provides a way in which landowners with differing approaches could seek different solutions to achieve resource protection. And that would be a clarification that we hope would be studied by the Adaptive Management Program. Help us find a way to do that.
Yes, I guess hearing all the testimony and the discussion here, I'm going to speak probably in favor of the amendment. And I guess depending on where the amendment goes, then that'll impact, I guess, the motion at hand. I am cognizant and listening to the testimony that was heard. I'm sensitive to the process issues as well. I like the amendment just strictly from the perspective that it clarifies, I think, what the subcommittee really their intent was, and so I will be, you know, voting in favor of the amendment. And then, depending on how that goes, we'll have a discussion about the motion in general.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Go ahead. On the phone?
This is Dave Summers. I've got the written language now, and I guess I would reiterate my concern that the amendment removes language in the original memo that says possible rule revisions. The original memo has flexibility in it. It says here's some ideas. The amendment does not. It says here are the adaptive management considerations, period. And that completely ties the hands of the adaptive management process. I think it's totally, you know, inappropriate. I like some of the ideas there. I think we ought to add them, but I don't think we ought to have language that restricts the adaptive management process. It totally defeats the purpose.
Mr. Chair, we're going to have a brief interruption on the phone. I believe the operator is going to come on and tell us, sir. So just so you know that's happening.
Okay. All right. Yes, Tom?
Well, I have a question for Norm. Would you please tell me what a stakeholder consensus timeline?
This gets to the attachment one that was part of the package that was sent out by board staff, and you know, it sets out a procedure for prioritizing what which watershed analyses should be reviewed first, and which should be second and third and 52nd. I think there's a reasonable timeline that we all can expect those reviews to occur within. That's not defined in the staff report, and I'm not making a suggestion of what that is. I think that needs to be a stakeholder process, and you know, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 2 years, who knows what it is. But when that's done, then if a review has not been initiated within that time, then it could be subject to the ability of the department to withdraw those prescriptions. That is, in other words, if it's a low priority watershed and it still hasn't had review, then there is not authority to withdraw those, as long as it's within the timeline. If they have exceeded that, they have not done the, not initiated the review, then this authority would kick in.
So who would establish?
It's a stakeholder process. It would go, it would happen through the adaptive management program, which is a stakeholder process.
So the adaptive management program would adopt a timeline for all the watershed analysis.
I would guess it would be through there. I mean, it could happen out of that. It could happen back in board rule process or something else. I don't want to presuppose how that gets done. But the idea is that it is a stakeholder process of identifying that timeline.
I don't want to say something, but so if there is no consensus on the timeline, what happens?
Then I suppose that would come back to the board. And we would have to discuss whether we craft a rule that establishes that timeline, as we have with any number of other issues.
Our proposal is that as part of the prioritized list, it will include a timeline.
But that's yours. That's not a consensus. I mean,
not consensus as envisioned by the adaptive management process, but we would fully involve stakeholders in developing that prioritization criteria and then vet the list.
Yeah, well, I'm comfortable with that, and that's fairly clear to me. I'm just not sure, when could adaptive management come up with such a list? I mean, right now their work plan is December before we could get a timeline out of adaptive management. I mean, before they can start on a timeline.
I have to comment here that as an administrator of a program that has a responsibility to protect public health and resources through forest practices, and that we have uncovered through, obviously, a committee that's given it great consideration, that we have some voids in our authority to make sure that watershed analysis is up to date and is using best available science. Now, we have been working, DNR has been working, obviously, with this board to find ways to fill in those voids that we have uncovered in terms of making sure that we're using best available science in watershed analysis. Early on, as Darren described, there was some thought by this board that these analysis should just be, the exemption by the analysis should just be removed. But on thoughtful examination, it was made obvious that there were many watershed analyses that were credible and were very good, and that in some cases even exceeded current rule. So it was clear that it was not necessary to throw them out, all of them. But that, in fact, we should carefully review them and look at them in a comprehensive manner to make sure that they were in fact performing their avowed purpose. Unfortunately, part of that examination showed that there were a number that were quite out of date. And so it's with that concern that we are coming forward to this board now, describing a voluntary approach. And I want to compliment Weyerhaeuser for stepping forward and going voluntarily down a path that I hope other landowners will as well, to make sure that we use best available science when we're doing our forest practices to minimize risk to public health and safety. So that's very laudable. But I am concerned now in this discussion that we are stretching out this timeline for addressing those analyses or those landowners who may not be as enthusiastic about the process as Weyerhaeuser, or perhaps as many other landowners who have made comment to this board this morning. You must remember that DNR has the responsibility to make sure that we take care of everything in every watershed, and that we have a process to make sure that we discharge our responsibility everywhere. So I am concerned that the way this particular amendment is worded, it will stretch out the timeline, and it will weaken DNR's authority to make sure that we carry out our public responsibility. I want to repeat that in no case does any of this proposal go around any consensus process, and that the timeline and the process involved contemplates nothing coming back to this board in this year or perhaps even next year. And during that entire time, we will have an opportunity for voluntary compliance, but we will also have an opportunity for a lot of caucus input into if things are working, if they're not, how can we best proceed to fill the voids that are currently present. So I encourage this board to remember of our public responsibility, acknowledging that there are many watershed analyses that are very effective, and that the process that my staff has laid out will acknowledge that, and they will be far down the priority list, and we want to take care of those analyses that are most out of date and that present most risk to public health and resources. And I am speaking to this amendment. I just feel that parts of it will be weakening any effort that DNR needs to just fill in some of the authority that we may or may not have through an adaptive management process that will take everybody's views into consideration. So I'm speaking against this amendment.
Commissioner and board members, the inclusion of the words in this proposal of mine that indicate a stakeholder consensus timeline has no intention whatsoever of stretching this process out. It is the intention of helping to define what that process is. And if we were to look at the staff report as it has come out, there are a number of parts of that that refer to time but give no context whatsoever. In issue number one, keeping watershed analysis prescriptions current. Is current today? Is it last year? Is it 10 years ago? There's no definition. The first bullet in that same issue number one, analyses need to be kept up to date. I agree, but what does up to date mean? In the the same issue then falls into issue number two as it discusses when reviews are being completed or, as we've put it, being initiated. I'm seeking only to help add clarity to what that timeline is, not to restrict it, not to stretch it out, but to let, if this does go through an adaptive management program, that should be a part of it, so that we as landowners know what to expect the timeline is, so that all of the stakeholders need to know what that timeline is. And we have an expectation that we're going to get through these reviews in a good period of time. We're going to implement those changes in a good period of time. This is not at all intended to stretch it. It's intended to help clarify to adaptive management and ultimately back to us if rulemaking is required.
And just recall, Norm, that this, as you know, this will all go through adaptive management. This language will probably be changed in many ways, and as it should be, through the adaptive management process. This is just guidance. This is just language forwarding to the adaptive management administrator. This is not. This would not be in rule. So I want to. What I want to do is I want to get a vote on this proposed amendment, and then we can take a break before we take up the before we consider the next order of business. But I would ask if there's any other comment before we take up the amendment.
I'll do a quick one. I know you want to jump to it. I think issue one is good clarification. Issue two, I'm just concerned about the wording of it in the manner that we've just now been discussing. But I basically agree with your point that we could do with better clarification around the whole timeline thing, what has occurred. I think that that's something that we should hear back from AMP on. But the way this is worded, I'm not sure if that quite gets us there. So I think I'll be voting against this probably, but I just wanted to say that I think that you're not far off the right track. It's just that maybe there's a better way of doing it.
So I think I'd like to call for a vote on the motion. So all favor of those in favor of the motion for the amendment as proposed, raise your hand. On the phone, Dave, how do you vote?
No.
Doug, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay, so one yes. Hold your hand up, please. Voting yes, one, two, three, four, five. Voting no, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. How do you vote?
No.
Okay, so that's 7-5 by my count. Is that your count as well, Patricia?
Yeah. Your vote?
Your vote.
Your
vote. My vote was no.
Yeah.
Okay, so the amendment fails. So I'd like to take a 10-minute recess, and I do so knowing that it's past noon hour, but hopefully we can come back and in a relatively short period of time complete our business. So let's take a 10-minute recess and reconvene shortly after 12:45. Sorry, guys. Hopefully you can return with us in about 10 minutes.
All right, we'll call you back.
Doug and Dave, are you going to call back? Or you can also just stay on the phone, and we'll put you on mute, and you won't hear. We won't hear you.
I'll just stay in line.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
You want to